And now for reading and writing and radio.
James, James, Morrison, Morrison, Weatherby, George, Dupree, took great care of his mother, though he was only three. James, James said to his mother, "Mother," he said he, "you must never go down to the end of the town if you don't go down with me." James, James, Morrison's mother put on a golden gown. James, James, Morrison's mother drove to the end of town. James, James, Morrison's mother said to herself, said she, "I can get right down to the end of the town and be back in time for tea." King John put up a notice, "Lost or stolen or strayed. James, James, Morrison's mother seems to have been mislaid. Last seen wandering vaguely, quite of her own accord, she tried to get down to the end of the town, 40 shillings reward." James, James, Morrison, Morrison, commonly known as Jim, told his other relations not to go blaming him. James, James said to his mother, "Mother," he said he, "you must never go down to the end of the town without consulting me." James, James, Morrison's mother hasn't been heard of since. King John said he was sorry. So did the Queen and the Prince. King John, somebody told me, said to a man he knew, "If people go down to the end of the town, well, what can anyone do?" Now then, very softly, James, James, Morrison, Morrison, Weatherby, George, Dupree, took great care of his mother, though he was only three. James, James said to his mother, "Mother," he said he, "you must never go down to the end of the town if you don't go down with me."
That piece of poetry was written by A.A. Milne, but it could be you. WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
James, James, what's fun and what's memorable about that poem written by A.A. Milne, same one that wrote Winnie the Pooh? Well, there's two things. There's the absurdity of the switch between the mother and the little boy. He's taking care of his mother. But even more important is the name, because without the name, that poem wouldn't really be very much. It rolls off your tongue. James, James, Morrison, Morrison, Weatherby, George, Dupree sets the rhythm for the poem. And Milne uses at least the James, James in every verse, and in a couple of the verses he uses it much more than that. And then at the very end he repeats the whole first verse, and if you see it written out, it's written with asterisks and other symbols from the typewriter without the actual words, because he knows that you already have it memorized. And you do, don't you? You can say James, James, Morrison, Morrison, Weatherby, George, Dupree without having to have the words, because it is such a memorable and such an important name. Today we're going to talk about names. Names are very important. My name is Jacqueline Joy Jackson, and it's a very important name to me. I've always liked it, and on account of it, I've always had a special feeling for the letter J. I like the way that it curves up and the way it crosses over on top. I like it written. I like it written in script and in print. I got a backwards J for Christmas, a huge one of wood that was used on circus posters. Any way J comes out, I like it, because it's my chief initial and it stands for all of my names. Your name is important to you. usually your names were decided before you were born. And I say your names because most parents think up a girl's name and a boy's name, and then whichever you turned out to be, that's the name that you got. Have you ever asked, by the way, what your name would be if you had been the other sex? And then when you weren't very old, as a baby, you began responding to your name to realize that that particular sound or combination of sounds meant you. It is very strongly identified with your sense of you-ness and with my sense of me-ness. A little older, and you might have begun questioning your name, thinking about it. You might have tried on some different names for size, wondered why you were called different names at different times. You might even have had some trouble with it, as a friend of mine did, and I'd like to read you his whole story. It's called Jimmy Is My Name. Me and my name have been together for almost 31 years, and our relationship has had its ups and downs. We started out okay. I guess no baby gives too much thought to its name. In fact, we got along fine until others decided to interfere. I started to school at the ripe age of 6. My mother had already taught me many of the basics, such as writing my own name. The teacher seemed pleased to find out I could write my name until I did so. I tried to be extra neat, took my time, and was very pleased with my big, clear Jimmy Lynn Waterman. She looked at it, gave me a warm smile, told me I had done a fine job, but in school we must use our names, not our nicknames. I was confused. I had used my name. No, she explained carefully, Jimmy was my nickname. James was my real name. Now I was confused. I had never even heard of James, but I was James. I didn't want to be James. I was Jimmy. If I was James, why did everyone call me Jimmy? Teacher explained to the class all about nicknames, and everyone but me seemed to understand. Bobby was really Robert, and Dick was really Richard, and they knew it. The big blow was the other Jimmy. His real name was James, and he knew it. I gave up. I must be James. The teacher seemed happy that I had learned my name, and since the other Jimmy was James, I really didn't mind at all. Everything was fine, and I started my school life on a happy note. But it didn't last too long. The first time my mom heard me use James, she corrected me. So I told her what the teacher had said. Well, she didn't care for that, and she explained that my name was Jimmy, not James. I didn't argue with her, but I was sure she had to be wrong, because my teacher couldn't be, and she called me James all the time. So it went on, James at school, Jimmy at home, until at the end of the first 6 weeks, we got our report cards. I was very excited. Now I felt just like the older kids, and I could hardly wait to get home and show my folks. They were pleased, and I got the much-expected praise, but there was one problem. My folks carefully marked out the James and wrote Jimmy, and told me to tell teacher that Jimmy was my name. I didn't, but teacher wrote my mother a note to the effect that on my school records, such as a report card, my formal name and not my nickname should be used. Once the note was in my mother's hands, she was very upset with my teacher. In fact, she called that very night, but there was no convincing my teacher, and at the end of the conversation, my mother was more upset than ever. That night, my mom made it clear to me that my name was Jimmy, and I must not let anyone tell me otherwise. Finally, I understood, but I wasn't happy. I had rather enjoyed having two names, like the other kids. Now I was back to just one. For the first time, I didn't like my name. Next morning, my mom took me to school, along with a birth certificate. After that, my teacher called me Jimmy, and I didn't like it one bit. For the next few years, I hated Jimmy, but I fought everyone who called me James because Jimmy was my name, and it seemed important. Then I got my first real nickname, Jupiter, and the problem about my name sort of faded away. From high school on, I hated Jimmy. It always seemed like such a baby name, and I didn't use it if I could avoid it. I lost Jupiter in high school, and friends called me Jim or J.L. About 4 years ago, I started liking Jimmy again, and now I get as upset with James as my mother used to. James is a wonderful name, but I am Jimmy, and I wouldn't change it for anything. We people need to put names to things, to understand them, to put them in order, to sort them out, to make sense out of things, to feel at home. There's a good story by Meinert de Jong called The House of 60 Fathers, and in it, a little Chinese boy called Tian Peo becomes separated during the war from his parents. He floats down the river in their river house, their floating house, and he has nothing with him but the family pig, the little pig. Up until then, the pig has had no name. But when Tian Peo is suddenly alone and lost and without anything that he can call his own, he finds it extremely important to give the pig a name. He decides to name the pig after his little sister, who is called Beauty of the Republic. But then he thinks that that's not such a good idea, that she might not like having the pig named after her, so he changes it to Glory of the Republic. In the Bible, in Genesis, the first thing that God has Adam do is to name things. You'd think that there'd be more important things to do with the world so new and all than to name things, but that didn't seem to be the case, and I sometimes chuckle over what must have been the scene. God saying to Adam, now look, Adam, I've worked hard all week and I'm bone weary. You can just name all these creatures for me, can't you? Really, just a minor job. And then the spectacle of every living thing, and there are 20,000 varieties of insects alone, all lined up waiting to find out who they are. And Adam sitting there on a rock with his brow furrowed and chewing on his pencil and scraping the bottom of the name barrel. Wallaby, aardvark, orangutan, ichneumonfly. Things have to have names for us to communicate about them. And God knew it, and Adam knew it, and we knew it. We know it. Suppose you didn't have any name. Do you think you there, or hey you, would really do? I don't even think Dr. Seuss's Thing One and Thing Two would be very satisfactory for long. There's another story we're very fond of called Tales from Moomin Valley. It's a Finnish book by Tove Janssen, and she writes about this problem of not having any name. I don't know what these little creatures are called in Finnish, but translated into English, these little creatures in the woods are called woodies or creepers or creepies. Now, Snufkin is a main character, and he's a wanderer and likes to be alone, and he is wandering through the woods when one of these little creepers comes up to him and begins saying, oh, you're the great Snufkin, and trying to carry on a conversation. Well, what's your name? Snufkin asked. The evening was spoiled anyway, so he thought it easier to talk. I'm so small that I haven't got a name, the creeper said eagerly. As a matter of fact, nobody's even asked me about it before. And then I meet you, whom I've heard so much about and always longed to see, and the first thing you ask me is what my name is. Do you think perhaps you might, I mean, would it be a lot of trouble for you to think up a name for me? A name that would be only mine and no one else would have it? Now? Tonight? Snufkin mumbled something and pulled his hat over his eyes. Someone flew across the brook on long pointed wings and gave a long, sad cry among the trees. You, 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 tee-woo. You can't ever be really free if you admire somebody too much, Snufkin suddenly said. I know. I know you know everything, the little creeper prattled on, edging closer still. I know you've seen everything. You're right in everything you say, and I'll always try to become as free as you are. Well, Snufkin keeps putting him off and putting him off and wondering why he can't go away. And finally, there's a long silence, and the night bird cries again, and the creeper arises and says in a small voice, well, I must be off, I think. Cheerio. Cheerio, Snufkin said, fidgeting a little. Listen, that name you asked for, what about Titiwoo, for instance? Titiwoo, don't you see? A light beginning, sort of, and a little sadness to round it off. The little creeper stared at him with yellow eyes in the firelight. It thought its name over. tasted it, listened to it, crawled inside it, and finally turned its snout to the sky and softly howled its new name so sadly and ecstatically that Snufkin felt a shiver run along his back. Then a brown tail disappeared in the brambles, and all was silent. Well, Snufkin goes on his way, but his conscience bothers him because he knows that he was really awfully rude and nasty to the little creeper, and he finally can't stand it any longer, and he turns around and comes back to play his harmonica and tell some stories and do some of the things that the creeper wanted him to do. And he hunts for him when he gets back to the same area the next day. "Tee-dee-woo," he cried, "tee-dee-woo." And the night birds awoke and answered him, "Tee-woo, tee-woo," but he heard nothing from the creeper. And so he looks farther and farther and calls, and finally he sees something brown and furry disappearing into the bushes. "Tee-dee-woo," Snufkin called softly. "I've come back for a chat." "Oh, hello," Tee-dee-woo replied, and stuck out his head from the bushes. "That's splendid, because I've got something to show you. Look, a nameplate with my own name on it to hang on my door when I get a house of my own." The creeper showed him a piece of bark with an owner's mark on it and continued importantly, "Neat, isn't it? Everybody thinks so." "Very," Snufkin said. "So you'll have a house of your own?" "Indeed," the creeper said excitedly. "I've moved away from home and begun living. It's so exciting. You see, before I had a name, I just used to hop about and perhaps feel this or that about this or that, and everything was simply happening around me. Sometimes nice things and sometimes not nice, but nothing was real, don't you see?" Snufkin started to reply, but the creep continued, "Now I'm a person, and everything that happens means something. Because it doesn't only happen, it happens to me, Tee-dee-woo. And Tee-dee-woo may think this or think that about it, as the case may be, if you see what I mean." "Certainly, I see," said Snufkin. "That's good for you." And so Tee-dee-woo goes on his way of being a person, and he doesn't need Snufkin anymore. He has his name. That bit is about the importance of having a name at all, to let you know you're new. That bit's important about having a name at all because it lets you know that you're you, but it includes a lot of other things, too, if you look at it closely. The way Tee-dee-woo tasted his name and listened to it and felt the rhythm of it and the sound of it and the taste of it. Your name has a rhythm. You could try clapping it, clapping all the names in your class, to get the feel of your name without the sound of the name. For instance, my name, Jacqueline Jackson, goes... You could try your name that way. Your name also has a sound, and your whole class could make a whole beautiful poem or chant just using the names in your class. Here's one we like from a record by Carl Orff called Music for Children.
Imogen, Alexander,
Timothy, Hillary,
Veronica, Isabella, Anna, Barbara,
Amaryllis, Peter, Paul, Sebastian, Ebenezer.
There are lots of things that we can do with our names. Today, let's write about them. You'll have plenty of ideas, but here are some, maybe, to get you going. What is your name? How do you feel about it? How does it taste on your tongue? Why were you named your name? Have you ever found out what your name means? My oldest daughter is named Damaris, or Damaris. That's a Greek name. And we've discovered that it means young cow or heifer. And I'm a farm girl, and I've always liked heifers, so that name pleases me. I've recently found out about a person named Halcyon, and I think that's a lovely name. It means serene or calm or peace, and I've never known anyone named Halcyon before. Have you ever wished for another name? If you could, What would you rename yourself? Have you ever had any trouble with your name, such as Jimmy Lynn Waterman did? Do you have pet names, names that people call you that you like? Do you have secret names? We haven't mentioned anything about tormenting names. Have you ever shouted back to people, "Sticks and stones can break my bones, but names can never hurt me"? If you have, you know that names can hurt plenty hard. Have you ever been hurt by a name? Fatty, or crybaby, or dummy, or pest? How did you feel? Have you ever hurt anyone by calling them names? I'll be glad if you'll send me what you've written. And as much as I can, I'll read over this program in a few weeks. Your teacher knows how to send in your writing. I don't need to have it rewritten, but I won't be able to send it back. So if you want to save your compositions for your own writing file, and I usually saved mine from about third grade on, make yourself a copy to keep. And you teachers, why don't you write your own story or poem too, and share it with your students and then with me? Who knows? We might even read a teacher's poem or essay over reading and writing and radio.